I'd like to open the halachic section of our shiur this evening by referring to a discussion which is both halachic and non-halachic at the same time. And the reason why is because it's a discussion about a halacha that doesn't exist. And if that sounds a little bit mysterious, let us put names to faces straight away. This year is rather unusual, certainly in terms of recent years, in that Seder night falls on Friday night. So the first night of Pesach is actually Leil Shabbos. Okay. This gives rise to a most interesting question. And I mention it as much for the question as for the answers, because asking the question is more than half of the avodah here. We know that there are many mitzvos that apply on certain Yom Tov, and when the Yom Tov falls on Shabbos, the mitzvah is suspended. So it is with shofar, so it is with lulav. These are mitzvahs to Araisa. There is the Rari, Shema Yavi Renu Arba Amos B'Shus Harabim. Perhaps you wish to check something out, and he may take it to a Chacham and carry in the Rishus Harabim, and therefore to protect the mitzvah, it's a chiddush, we're used to it, but it's a chiddush, the Torah mitzvah is suspended, B'Sheva Al Ta'aseh, in order to protect against a possible breach, unintentional, the person may forget himself, and carry on Shabbos. If that is the case, so the question is asked, Seder night seems to get a pass. There are so many mitzvahs on Seder night, the matzah and the moror and the arba kosos, and yet we do not find that any of them are suspended. Shema yavirenu arba amos b'shus harabim. Why are the mitzvahs allowed to proceed without such worry? So this is a question that was dealt with by many of the acharonim, and the answers are actually, each one in their own way, quite simple and straightforward, but it's part of the orientation of the evening. The Netziv, in the Hamak She'elin, his Perish to the She'iltas, says very simply, the lulav and the shofar, the fulfillment of those mitzvahs, does not need to take place in any particular location or in any particular way. And therefore, a person could as much fulfill the mitzvah of netilas lulav, or of blowing slash hearing the shofar, anywhere. So if he has his questions and he's not sure, so he'll take it to the rabbi's house and fulfill the mitzvah there. The mitzvahs of Seder night, of course, are fulfilled at home, as they should be, b'shulchan orech, b'misubim. And therefore, it is unlikely, even in haste, that a person will take all of their paraphernalia of the Seder night, rush them over to the rabbi's house, and insinuate themselves into his Seder for the sake of enlightenment as to how to fulfill the mitzvahs. Because there is a grounding at home, which is embedded in the nature of the mitzvahs of Seder night, we're not worried that a person will rush to remove them from the house. Secondly, says the Netziv, and this is very interesting, the other two mitzvos, namely lulav and shofar, apply during the day. And this is interesting for us, because if we put ourselves back into the pre-streetlight era, a person will be less inclined to rush out of his house to go anywhere at night. The mindset of the time was, when it's dark, you're home. If you have a question, deal with it. But this notion of a person forgetting themselves and rushing to the rabbi's house, in high noon, that's a scenario to be worried about. In the middle of the night, less so. It is true that one of the mitzvahs that is suspended is the reading of the Megillah, and the Megillah takes place both at night and in the day. However, says the Netziv, the primary suspension is really for the sake of the Megillah in the day, because it has that in common that a person may rush out. Once the daytime mitzvah is suspended. So then the night time, which according to many is quote-unquote purely a preparation for the daytime, if you're not going to read the next day, so then there is no mitzvah to read the night before. The Stechemet, Rav Chaim Chizkia Medini of Chevron, in his encyclopedic work Stechemet, also discusses this question briefly. And he says, again, it's a balabatish teretz. And that is that it could be that the reason why none of the mitzvahs are suspended is because they don't share the same worry as lulav and shofar or Megillah. The problem with lulav and shofar Megillah is the person who doesn't know how to read may take the Megillah to a person who can read. He doesn't know how to blow shofar or exactly what the truer sound like or the shivarim sound like, and therefore he's not really sure how to fulfill the mitzvah. And the same is true for lulav. The na'anuim, which way first, which way second, which way round, back to front, left to right, what does he take first? There's many questions that can apply here. When it comes to the mitzvahs of matzah and maror, I don't think any Jew has any problems in terms of knowing how to eat. It's quite natural. It's part of our religion. And therefore, there are less sveikus. What's he going to ask? The most he could ask is this chametz, in which case he should throw it out anyway. Or how should I lean? You don't need to bring a live specimen of matzah in order to simulate the leaning process. These are questions that can be dealt with without him having to take the objects themselves. And therefore, says the Stechemet, matzah is matzah, maror is maror, more or less everything is in place, and therefore the zone of lack of clarity doesn't exist in these mitzvahs as it does with others, and therefore we leave it alone. So it's very interesting to realize that as we sit down this Friday night to the Seder, we are actually doing something quite unusual. We're fulfilling mitzvahs on Shabbos, that if this was the daytime or if things were only slightly different, they would have been suspended along with the rest of them. It is interesting to note that although, to put it in those terms, Pesach is not affected by the fact that it falls on Shabbos, but this year Shabbos is affected by the fact that it falls on Pesach. In a very specific way, and that is, there is a bracha that we say in the end of Ma'ariv, Magin Avos. It's called Me'ein Sheva. It's a digest of the seven brachas of the Shmona Esrei, Magin Avos Bidvaro, Mechai Mesim B'Ma'amoro. And the origins of that bracha dates back to the times where the shul used to be somewhat outside, out of the way a little bit, and therefore if someone would come late, which apparently happened even then. So they didn't want to leave him, if he starts later, they didn't want to leave him in shul, because it's a sakana. People will be afraid to walk back home by themselves, and therefore, this is the origins of the bracha of Magen Avos. Everyone adds on just another couple of minutes through this compacted Chazaras HaShatz, in order to ensure that even if a person was a couple of minutes late, he'll leave shul together with everybody else. Pesach night has the special segula, which is called Leil Shimurim. Leil Shimurim min hamazikin, and the special quality of Shmira expresses itself in the fact that there is no need to worry for a person to walk back home from shul by himself, which is interesting, because even though the Netziv says a person doesn't rush out of his house at night, even if it's Leil Shimurim, he won't rush, but he can walk. And therefore, when we daven Ma'ariv on Seder night, even if it falls on Friday night, it is the only Yom Tov where we don't say Magen Avos. It's after the Shmona Esrei, it's Halel, for those that have that Minhag, and Aleinu. So that is the mild impact halachically in terms of the confluence of Seder night and Friday night. But what I would like to come and devote some time to this evening is the issue of the eating of the afikoman. Now, afikoman, what's interesting is, as we know, the end of the Seder, we eat a kezias of matzah, and that's to remember the Korban Pesach. We don't have the Korban Pesach, in times being what they should be, we had Pesach and matzah and maror. This, in the times of Golis, we have matzah and maror, and at the end of the Seder, another kezias of matzah, zecher for the Korban Pesach. We also know, it became famous as the answer to the Ben Chochom, Ein maftirin achar ha-Pesach afikoman. We don't eat anything after the Korban Pesach. It's interesting to note that us calling this final piece of matzah an afikoman is actually a misnomer, because afikoman means dessert. Ein maftirin achar ha-Pesach afikoman means you don't eat any dessert after the Korban Pesach. The kazayas of matzah that we eat corresponding to the Korban Pesach is called the afikoman. But we get the idea. It's to remember the thing after which you should not eat an afikoman. Anything else? Okay. Now, because this is true, so there is a halacha, a halachic discussion, that would otherwise have been left to the realms of what we would call hilchas el mashiach, the halachas of Mashiach, because when the Mashiach comes, then we will need to know, and nowadays we don't need to know. But all of a sudden it becomes quite pertinent. Namely, if the afikoman is a zecher for the eating of the Korban Pesach, we now need to know what is my time frame for the eating of the Korban Pesach. Without the afikoman, it would be a Torah Lishma discussion, a theoretical discussion. But the afikoman is a zecher. So it now becomes a halacha lemaisa question. Till when can one eat the Korban Pesach? Now, of course, the Korban Pesach is instantly unique in terms of the mitzvah of eating, because it can only be eaten at night, not before. It is the only Korban that, although, of course, the avoda aspects of the Korban are done during the day, but you wait till nightfall before you eat. Any other Korban can be eaten straight away. That's in terms of the beginning, and as we know, we wait for nightfall for all of the Seder-related mitzvahs, beginning with Kaddish, it's one of the Arba Kosos. So the beginning is with Tzeis HaKochavim, with nightfall. But what about the end? That is to say, until when can one eat the Korban Pesach equals until when can one eat the Afikom? So in this matter, we have a machlokas tanoim. Namely, we have Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria on the one hand, and he is of the opinion that the Korban Pesach can only be eaten until chatzos, till the middle of halachic midnight, we would say. The midway point between when it gets dark and when it gets light. This year, I believe, it's something like 12:46, something like that, plus minus. Rabbi Akiva says, no, Korban Pesach can be eaten the whole night. So that's a machlokas between these two tanoim. What is at the roots of this machlokas? Why does one say chatzos? Why does one say the whole night? Where does it come from? Well, the Talmud in Maseches Brachos in Daf Tesom and Aleph explains that the Torah tells us how to eat the Korban Pesach. Well, it says, v'achaltem oso b'chipazon, in a hurry. Now, of course, the Korban Pesach itself is not eaten in a hurry. But that word, b'chipazon, does give us a metric for understanding the time frame of the Korban Pesach, because it means that the timing of the mitzvah of eating the Korban Pesach corresponds to the time of chipazon, of rush. The question is, who's rush? Who is in a hurry? Because, actually, on that evening, there were two points of hurriedness. At Chatzos, which is when Makas Bechoros happened, that's when Mitzrayim got into a hurry. They activated and prevailed upon the Jewish people to leave, who said they weren't leaving till the morning. So Chatzos represents the time of Chipazon of Mitzrayim. The morning represents the time that the Jewish people themselves started to get going and moving. And when they left in a hurry. As we know, the dough didn't have time to rise. So Chipazon of Yisrael represents the morning. So it's the most fascinating machlokas, and the ramifications are immense. When the Torah says, eat the Korban Pesach until the time of Chipazon, the question is, who's Chipazon? For Elazar ben Azaria, the Chipazon of Mitzrayim, which is Chatzos, and that's it. For Rabbi Akiva, you eat it until the time of Chipazon of the Jewish people, which is the following morning. You have the whole night. So, a machlokas, not the first and not the last in our religion. The question is, who's the halacha like? And here, we find a most unusual situation. And the reason why is because These are Tanaim, these are authors of the Mishnah, and as we know, there is a concept called Stam Mishnah. Stam Mishnah means that the Mishnah has no name attached to it. And a Stam Mishnah is an overwhelmingly powerful halachic force. And the reason why is that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi did not attach anyone's name to it in order to indicate that it represents the consensus. And therefore, Stam Mishnah is instantly the halacha. So it would be interesting to discover whether or not one of these opinions has a Stam Mishnah in their favor. And as we look, we will find, much to our confusion, that they both do. There is a Stam Mishnah in favor of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and a Stam Mishnah in favor of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, in fact, this is it's one of the famous, if one could call it that, the well-known Mishnayos, because it's from Ezehu Makom on the Mishnayos we say before Psukei Dezimra, when it talks about the unique features of the Korban Pesach, Eino nechal ella lemenuyav, eino nechal ella tzali, ve eino nechal ella ad chatzos, cannot be eaten any time after chatzos, says the Talmud and Maseches Zvachim, Daf Nun Zayin. This Mishnah corresponds to the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Chatzos, that's it. Okay, there's no names. It's a Stam Mishnah. So we have a Stam Mishnah in favor of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. On the other hand, there is a Mishnah elsewhere, in the end of the second parak of Megillah, which the Gemara identifies as being in league with Rabbi Akiva. For there the Mishnah says, Kol davar shemitzvasa balayla, kosher kol halayla. Anything that the mitzvah is at night, the mitzvah applies the entire night. And whenever the Mishnah uses an expression like kol, it means to be kolel. It means to embrace something which is even not mentioned in the Mishnah, and the Talmud identifies that as the Korban Pesach. Kol davar, everything? Everything. Including Korban Pesach. And it's a Stam Mishnah. So this is highly irregular, because normally when we meet a Stam Mishnah, we fold up and go home. But here, we have two Stam Mishnayos, and they conflict with each other. It's most fascinating, even before we get to the halacha now, which we are no closer to discovering yet, that to appreciate that this sheds entirely new light on the very well-known story. We mention it in HaGodesh HaPesach. Maise, Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Akiva, Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shur, Rebbe Tarfon, Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah, Tadal Maise, they were in Bnei Brak, and they were talking Yetzias Mitzrayim the whole night, until the Talmidim came and said, Rabbis, Higiyas Man Kriya Shema, Shel Shachris. Okay, there's a lot to discuss with regards to that story, but what's fascinating in terms of our discussion now is that they were involved in the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim the whole night. Now, the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is tied to the mitzvah of Matzah, as we say, Ba'avur Zeh, V'gadata Levincha, Ba'avur Zeh Lo Amarti, Ela B'Shor Sheyesh, Matzah Umar, Menachem Lefanecha. The time frame of the mitzvah of telling the story parallels the time frame of the mitzvah of Matzah. The mitzvah of Matzah corresponds to the time of the Korban Pesach. So that's interesting, because if you now wish to know for how long does the mitzvah extend of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, the answer is check in with your local rabbi, how does he paskin about Korban Pesach? If he says till Chatzos, Haggadah is till Chatzos. If he says the whole night, Haggadah is the whole night. What's interesting about those five personalities? Four of those five are known to be locked in this machlokas. In other words, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yeshua, on the one hand, they hold that Korban Pesach is the entire night. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Eliezer, on the other hand, two of those five, are on record as holding that Korban Pesach is only until Chatzos, which is very interesting, because now the question is, what are they still doing there? When is Man Kriya Shema Shel Shachris? Their Talmidim should have come and bailed them out, approximately, at Chatzos, and said, Rabbi Seinu, the mitzvah is finished. And the answer, says the Stipler Gaon, is very simple. Where did this take place? The Haggadah tells us, in Bnei Brak. Bnei Brak was the town of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was the posuk of B'nai Brak. And therefore, says the Stipler, as true as it is that for two of these rabbis, if they were at home, their seder would have finished already. But they're not at home. They're in Rabbi Akiva's home. And as much as they have machlokus, but they're guests in his house. And this is his town. And if he's going to continue, it's not a waste of time. They would probably be doing a different mitzvah. But it's not Bittul's man. And therefore, out of deference for Rabbi Akiva, he's the Morad Asra. So you have two rabbis there who are there for another 6 hours discussing Yetzias Mitzrayim because it's Rabbi Akiva's house. That's old school machlokas. Doesn't mean they agreed with him, but there's a way to argue. So, who is the halacha like? That is the burning question. Now, to make things even more complicated, if one could imagine, not only does each side have a Stam Mishnah to support them, which means they lock heads, it happens to be, if we scour the Shas, that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who says on Chatzos, has not only one Stam Mishnah to support him, but three. There is the Mishnah in Zvachim that we mentioned, Einu Nechal Ela Ad Chatzos. The very first Mishnah in Shas is identified by the Talmud in Brachos there, Daftes, as being in league with Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and it's a Stam Mishnah. And the final Mishnah in Maseches Psachim is also identified as being a Stam Mishnah like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So now, we have a most unusual question on our hands. What do you do when one Tana has one Stam Mishnah, which normally would be enough, and the other has three? Does it make a difference? Are three better than one? Or do we say at this stage, once you're in the zone of a Stam Mishnah, it makes no difference anymore. Three and one are just numbers. As long as they have Stam Mishnah, so then we need to look elsewhere for the halacha. And on this, opinions are divided. There are those who've shown him who they take a look at these three Stam Mishnahs of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Three is a lot. It's more than one. And they paskin like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, at the very least, to take his opinion into account. The Rambam, on the other hand, says, no, the halach is Korban Pesach, can be eaten the whole night. It's like Rabbi Akiva, and the Mefarshim explained that as far as the Rambam is concerned, as soon as everyone has a Stam Mishnah, so the field is leveled. And you have three Stam Mishnayas, good for you. It's enough that Rabbi Akiva has one, the field is leveled, and we revert to the default. In a dispute between Rabbi Akiva and one of his colleagues, the halach is like Rabbi Akiva. So, what does this have to do with us? When we take all of this background and we put it together, we will understand that the Rosh, when he talks about Afikoman, says as follows. It says, Rosh, there are two reasons why one should eat Afikoman before Chatzos. Number one, there's a very good chance of the halachas like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, that the Korban Pesach can only be eaten on Chatzos. Absolutely. That's number one. Not to be dismissed. And number two, says the Rosh, even if the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, even if that's the case, it's the only other possibility, that the Korban Pesach is eaten the whole night. But let us not forget, and we mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, that even mitzvahs that in principle apply the whole night, but the Rabbanon applied a protective measure that one could only fulfill them until Chatzos. That's once again the first Mishnah in Brachos. And therefore, says the Rosh, practically, even Rabbi Akiva would eat the Korban Pesach until Chatzos. And if the Afikoman is Zecher to a Korban Pesach, then even for Rabbi Akiva, it should be eaten only until Chatzos. Which means all roads lead to Chatzos, according to the Rosh. And this is responsible for the wording of the Shulchan Aruch, who phrases this very delicately in Simen Taf Ayin Zayin, Si'if Aleph. Yehei Zahir. A person should be careful. In other words, take care. Take care now. That's the Shulchan Aruch. It's very unusual and very specific language. It's very soft. Normally the Shulchan Aruch says, Mutter Asur. Here the Shulchan Aruch says, take care. Why? Because the Shulchan Aruch is well aware that not everyone agrees with the Rosh. There are some who say that you can eat the Afikoman the entire night because the Korban Pesach could be eaten the entire night. However, in deference to the Rosh, taking his opinion into account, a person should be careful. Okay. Now, it happens to be that this is a halacha that is easier, I think, to fulfill here in Israel than it is elsewhere in the world, certain places in Chutz La'aretz, for the very simple reason that Yom Tov comes in much earlier, and therefore, relatively so. So even if a person does not hurry their Seder, there's a good chance that they could eat the Afikomen if they keep an eye on the clock by Chatzos. In Chutz La'aretz, Yom Tov in some locales comes in quite late, and if you have the Afikomen before Chatzos, so you really are condensing the Seder. Now it could be, so be it. But it is worthwhile mentioning that there is a fascinating discussion by the Avnei Nezer of Sokhachev. And he says as follows. We say, and let's follow carefully because this is really it's wonderful. Some people rely on it. Some people don't. But everyone has to know it. Ein maftir in achar ha-pesach afikomen. After you eat the afikomen, you can't eat anything else. Okay. Says the Avnei Nezer, for how long? Till when? Ever? By the next morning, you're okay, apparently. So if we're really looking to lock down, until when do we say, Ein maftir in achar ha-pesach, you had the afikomen, you can't eat again. Until when? And by the way, why not? Well, we know why not. We don't eat anything after the afikomen in order that the taste of the afikomen should stay with you. That's no. Kadeshi sha'er tam pesach befiv. Okay. How long do we want the taste of the mitzvah to stay in your mouth? Says the Avnei Nezer, as long as the mitzvah applies. In other words, as long as you are in the zone of the time frame of the mitzvah, so even if you've already eaten it, but you want the mitzvah to stay with you, and it is yet a continued fulfillment of that mitzvah. But if that's true, as soon as the time for the mitzvah is finished, so you're not restricted anymore. The mitzvah's over. You fulfilled it. Now you can eat again if you want. And therefore, if we put names to faces now, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, the afikomen has to be eaten before Chatzos, correct. And once you've eaten the afikomen, you can't eat anything else. Until Chatzos. But after Chatzos, so for the very reason that the time for the mitzvah is finished, so you're clear. On the other hand, according to Rabbi Akiva, you have the whole night to eat the afikomen. So whenever at night you eat it, at that point you can't eat again for the rest of the night, because that's when the mitzvah applies. And so, says the Avnei Nezer, if a person sees that time is of the essence, Chatzos is approaching, and he's nowhere near Afikomen yet, so what should he do? The Shulchan Aruch says one should take care. But he's stuck, because if he has his Afikomen now, that's the end of his Suda. Says the Avnei Nezer, he should do as follows. A few minutes before Chatzos, he should take a kazayas and eat it as the afikomen, with the following in mind. If the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, so this is my afikomen. Okay. Once he's eaten the afikomen, so then he can't eat, as far as Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is concerned, for approximately 3 minutes, if he's timed it just before Chatzos. Once Chatzos has passed, he can eat again. As they say, Mimonavshach, any way you look at it. Either the halacha is like Rabbi Kiva, in which case that he hasn't had the afikomen yet, or the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, in which case he's had it, and the afikomen has happened, and the ein maftir in time has also passed, and he can continue with the Suda. And at the end of his Suda, however many hours later, let him have a second afikomen and say, if the halacha is like Rabbi Kiva, so my afikomen is now. So this is the classic, when we put it all together, this is the Tanai, the conditional afikomen that was propounded by the Avnei Nezer, and it is reported in the Mikrai Kodesh of Tzvi Pesach Frank that Reb Chaim Soloveitchik also would do this and endorsed it and relied on it. So it's certainly a fascinating concept to be aware of and gives us much more insight into the Ein Maftir in Achar Pesach Afikomen. Okay. Now, this machlokus which we've related to so far as a halachic machlokus, will take us into the Haggadah, and it will explain something else. There is the famous discussion between Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, Harei ani kevin shivim shana. I'm like, I'm 70, he was only 18, but he became the Nasi, etc., as we know. At a certain point, we begin to discuss the question as to whether the mitzvah of remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim applies only by day or also by night. And the bottom line will be, it applies by night as well. Now, why do we talk about this in the Haggadah? As the Aruch HaShulchan explains. After all, this is not about Pesach, it's about every night. So why are we talking about it now? The answer, says the Aruch HaShulchan, is if you don't understand that there is a mitzvah to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim every night, then you will not appreciate what is so unusual and exceptional about Seder night. Because if you thought that on Seder night there's a mitzvah to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim once a year, you've made a mistake, because remembering is a mitzvah every night. And this is further confirmation of that which we say at the end of Avodim Hayinu, Kol Hamar Belesapi B'Yetzias Mitzrayim HaRezim Meshubach. If every night there is a mitzvah to say something, it must be that on Seder night, the special mitzvah is to say more than something. And the more you say, the more you fulfill that mitzvah. And that is how that discussion found its way into the Haggadah. So let us survey what happened. Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, he was never able to convince the Chachamim that to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim at night as well. Until Ad Shedrasha ben Zoma. Until Ben Zoma came along and saved the day. Because Ben Zoma, he brought the pasuk, Leman tizkor es yom tizcha me'eretz Mitzrayim, kol yimei chayecha. To remember Yetzias Mitzrayim, kol yimei chayecha. Now the word kol, again, is a ribui. It's coming to expand and include. What is it coming to include? Well, according to Ben Zoma, it's coming to include the night. Yimei chayecha, elu hayomim. Kol yimei chayecha, lehavi limos ha-mashiach. Okay. But the rabbis argued on him. And the rabbis said, no. Yimei chayecha is yomim like olam hazeh. And kol yimei chayecha doesn't expand from day to night, but it expands future-wise, even limos ha-mashiach, but not at night. And that, in a nutshell, is the machlokus between them. Says the Beis Halevi, if we just take a step back and consider all of the opinions here at the table, says Beis Halevi, I understand Ben Zoma, because he has his drasha. I understand the Chachamim, because they darshan differently. But the only one who I don't understand is Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, for a very simple reason. Ben Zoma concurs with him that one has to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim at night because he has a pasuk. The Rabbanon argue, and they reject that drasha, and therefore they remain with their position. There's no mitzvah at night. So far, so good. One learns the pasuk one way, one learns it the other way. My question is, what about Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria? In other words, if we rewind before Ben Zoma came into the picture, and all we have is Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, and he's arguing with the Chachamim, and he's trying to convince them you should mention Yetzias Mitzrayim at night. He was never able to convince until Ben Zoma, a new hope, Ben Zoma came in and said, oh, there's a pasuk. So Ben Zoma brought the pasuk, but that means that Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria has thus far been functioning without a source. Because if he knows Ben Zoma's pasuk, why does he need to wait for Ben Zoma to say it? So apparently, his position that you have to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim at night is even before we get to the drasha of Ben Zoma. But if that's true, then where does it come from? Because where can it come from if not from there? And that is the problem of the Beis Halevi. Again, if Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, if he's cognizant of the source of Ben Zoma, so why wait for Ben Zoma to say it? Say it yourself. And if he's not aware of it, or he's not based on it, then what is he based on? There's nothing else. So why does he say it in the first place? Why was he always so adamant to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim at night? Says the Beis Halevi, in order to understand the position of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, let's come back to his halachic position on the question of the time of eating Korban Pesach. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah holds Korban Pesach is to be eaten until Chatzos. Why? Because when the Torah says, eat it b'chipozon, and the time frame, the definitive time frame is the time of chipozon, chipozon of who? Whose hurry? Says Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, the chipozon of the Mitzrayim. Now, there's an important subtext here. Because if you define the critical time as Chatzos because that's when the Mitzrayim were in a hurry, or the next day when the Jewish people are in the hurry, wherever you put the anchor here, whichever you define as the critical time, is really a statement as where you see the axis of Yetzias Mitzrayim. What is the most significant time that represents Yetzias Mitzrayim? For Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, it's Chatzos. Because that's really when the whole thing got started. They didn't leave practically till the next day. But you see, it leaves its mark on Korban Pesach. After Chatzos, there's no Korban Pesach, because this critical time has passed. If you see Chatzos as the critical time, it's because you see that that is really when Yetzias Mitzrayim is considered to have happened. And if that's true, says the Beis HaLevi, then it's the very same Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Lishitoso, we would say, consistent with his opinion, who, of course, it's axiomatic for him that you have to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim at night. Because according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Yetzias Mitzrayim happened at night, in the most significant sense of the word, as is evident by his position with regards to Korban Pesach. It's only the Chachamim who argue with him, and they say, no, Chipozon of the Pasuk means the next day. Yetzias Mitzrayim is considered to have happened at day. So they never agreed with him to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim at night. Ben Zomo came in with a Pasuk, and they argued with what the word Kol means in the Pasuk as well. But at the very least, as the Beis HaLevi, if we keep track of the background of these personalities, we'll understand why it is that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was adamant and insistent and certain that one has to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim at night, even before anybody brought any Pasuk to that effect. Night is when Yetzias Mitzrayim happened, according to him, as is evidenced by the focus on the Chipozon of Mitzrayim in the middle of the night. Okay, so there's a section of the Haggadah which has new light shed on it by the halachic discussion, and once again we see the two are always interwoven. Now, let's move a bit further into the Haggadah. The main body of Maggid is really the darshining, as the Mishnah says, V'dorish mi'arami aveidavi. Those five psukim that are from the time when a person brings Bikurim in Parshas Kisavo, Arami aveidavi, Vayered Mitzrayma, and we begin to expound. And as we know, the nature of Maggid is we take every couple of words and then we say Kumoshe Ne'emar, Kumoshe Ne'emar. We bring it back to the scene of the crime, to Parshas Shemos, or Va'era, and Bo, and amplify. And that's called Tadarshan. That's how we darshan the Pasuk. And let us begin, therefore, at the beginning. Say Ulamad. Go out and learn. Learn about Lavan. Lavan Bikesh Lakur Sakol, She'ne'emar Aramia Vedavi, Vayered Mitzrayma. And we ask at this point a question that we always ask. Because if we don't ask it, we may miss the point. Aramia Vedavi Vayered Mitzrayma means Lavan tried to destroy Yaakov, and Yaakov went down to Mitzrayim. If you didn't know better, if you didn't know anything, which ideally is how the child is meant to be at Seder night, he's meant to arrive knowing nothing and then be surprised at the unusual things happening at that night. This is the opposite of what happens nowadays, where children prepare manishtana. They rehearse their surprise so that they know exactly when they will be shocked and they know how to respond, and you need to know how to respond to them, because if you get the answer wrong, so then you're in trouble. So the child who knows nothing is a rare find. But if he really didn't know anything, or a stranger comes to the Seder, he doesn't know any Jewish history, and he hears these words, Arami Avidavi Vayered Mitzrayma, he could make a grave error. He could make a historical mistake, because it really sounds like, if you translate it into English, Laban tried to kill Yaakov, and Yaakov went down to Mitzrayim. It sounds like he ran away from Laban down to Mitzrayim, which is not true. When Laban tried to kill Yaakov, he was unable to do so, and Yaakov went home, and then lots of years happened, and lots of other things happened, and there was a Ksonas Pasim, and Yosef and the brothers, and a famine, and then Yaakov went down to Mitzrayim. All that's been missed out, and these two phrases have been put one after the other. It sounds like they are sequential, but they're not. So what is the meaning of Aramid Avedavi leading to Vayered Mitzrayim? They have nothing to do with each other. Never the twain shall meet. There's a most enigmatic comment of the Haggadah on the words Vayered Mitzrayim. What does the Haggadah say on the words Vayered Mitzrayim? Onus al pi hadibur. He had to go. Al pi hadibur. Because of speech. Onus al pi hadibur. Very obscure. What does that mean? Who's dibur? Well, the simple understanding of Onus al pi hadibur, of course, is that he was forced to go because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him to go. Al pi hadibur. Hashem said, Al tira mirdo mitzrayma, meaning, go. Honestly, he had no choice. But one of the most unusual perushim on these words, Onus al pi hadibur, is to be found in the writings of Reb Shlomo Kluger. Reb Shlomo Kluger has 16 perushim on the Haggadah, and this is from one of them. Onus al pi hadibur. Who's dibur? What's interesting is, we talk about the Bris Ben HaBesorim. Ger Yezarecha Be'eretz Lo Lahem V'Avodim V'Inu Osam, and that all happened in Mitzrayim. Now, according to many Mefarshim, the Bris Ben HaBesorim already began to happen from the time that Yitzhak was born. And what that means is that the Jewish people were, because they were not treated with as residents, certainly not as the primary residence, so they already had a Golus experience even as they were in Eretz Yisrael, or Eretz Canaan, as it was known then. Which is interesting, because if you can have Golus at home, so to speak, why move? In other words, what was it that transported Golus that was already happening in Eretz Yisrael to another place, which ended up being Mitzrayim? Says Rav Shlomo Kluger, a most surprising answer. At the end of Parshas Vayetze, Lavan chases after Yaakov to get his idols back, to get his trophim back. And he accuses Yaakov of being a thief and of running away and of stealing his daughters and then of stealing his trophim, and then, which implicitly is also accusing Yaakov of being a closet idol worshipper, because, you know, why just do my idols? Get your own. And Yaakov gets upset, actually. The pasuk says Yaakov gets upset. Vayichar Yaakov vayarav im Lavan. He gets upset. And he says a few things. And one of the things that he says is, Im asher timtza es Elohecha lo yichyeh. Whoever has your idols, they will not live. He was sure no one had them. V'hu lo yoda, Ki Rachel gnava sam. He didn't know Rachel had actually taken them. Now, the Medrash says, and this is very harsh, and there may be more than one factor to this, but the Medrash says that that was a contributing factor to the early demise of Rachel. Im asher timtza es Elohecha lo yichyeh. Even though he didn't find them with her, but she had them. That means, And at this point, the terminology becomes very blunt. That means that Yaakov was a contributing factor to the early death of Rachel. Now, he didn't mean it, for sure. It was unintentional. There's a halachic term for that. It's called shogeg. And there's a penalty for it, which is called Golus. If a person unintentionally is responsible for the death of somebody else, they need to go into Golus. And the Gemara says, what if they're already in Golus? They need to go somewhere else in Golos. Says Rav Shlomo Kluger, that is the meaning of the words Vayered Mitzrayma. Why does he have to go to Mitzrayim? He's already in Golos here in Eretz Yisrael. Onus, he was forced to leave. Al pi hadibur, because of Dibur. Whose Dibur? His Dibur, which killed Rachel. That's quite a chiddush. And the truth is, so if we look at the ultimate cause of all of this, I mean, Yaakov, in a sense, is reacting. Who is he reacting to? He's reacting to Lavan. That means everything that Lavan does, after 20 years of persecuting him and deceiving him and working him like a slave, and then he runs after him, accuses him of all of these things, all of that is what got Yaakov to react in this way and speak, in a sense, in a way that was less measured than he normally would. Ultimately, therefore, the Haggadah implicates Lavan. That is the connection between Aramia Vedavi by Yered Mitzrayim. The ultimate requirement to go down to Mitzrayim is brought back to Lavan. Because of Lavan's persecutions, and he was trying to destroy Yaakov, which brought out that reaction with Yaakov, Onus api hadibor, it really is true that Aramia Vedavi led to by Yered Mitzrayim. If not immediately, but ultimately, because of the golos that ensued. So that's a very unusual perush of Reb Shlomo Kluger there. And the Haggadah continues. Vayehi sham legoy gadol atzum varav. That's the pasuk. Now, at this point in Magid, we need to watch very carefully how the psukim are quoted and how they are explained. Because if we look at the psukim that are brought to amplify on the words Vayisham Legoy Gadol Atzum Varav, it says as follows. Gadol, or some say Gadol Atzum. What is the amplification of those words Gadol Atzum? Okay, so the explanation or the elaboration of the words Gadol Atzum is that pasuk of from the beginning of Shemos, which we know, Bnei Yisrael, Paru, Vayishritzu, etc. What about Varav, which is the next word, Gadol Atzum, Varav? Where's the amplification of the word Varav? It comes from a pasuk in Yecheskel, which says, "Shine emar revava ketzema chasode nisatich." That's Rav. That's the Haggadah. And the Aruch HaShulchan, in his Perush Leil Shimurim, asked a simple question: these three words, Gadol, Atzum, Varav, are all to be found in the earlier pasuk, the first pasuk that's quoted, Uvnei Yisrael, Paru, Vayishritzu, Vayirbu, Vayatzmu, B'ma'od Ma'od. That means that all of the relevant phrases and words of Vayisham, Legoy Gadol, Atzum Varav, are actually contained within the first pasuk. And if that's the case, then what is the Baal Haggadah telling us? By extracting the word Varav, he is not elaborating it with the pasuk in Shemos, but rather he quotes this other pasuk in Yecheskel, Revava Ketzema Chasode Nisatich. What's the lesson here? So the Aruch HaShulchan explains, and these are the delicate nuances of Magid that sometimes are glossed over. Our impression is that this pasuk, the transition of the psukim within Aramia Vedavi. So it starts, Vayered Mitzrayim, Vayisham Legoy Gadol Atzum Varav, and then, next pasuk, Vayareyu Asana HaMitzvim Vayanunu. And they started to afflict us, etc., etc., out of the blue. In other words, pasuk 1 is B'ma'alosam Shel Yisrael, all the great things about Yisrael, and pasuk 2 are all the persecutions of the Mitzrim. But They're disjointed. Nothing, A doesn't lead to B. And therefore, says the Aruch HaShulchan, the Haggadah, the Baal Haggadah, in a very specific way, is giving us to understand that these three expressions, Gadol, Atzum, Varav, are not three ways of saying the same thing. But actually, between Gadol, Atzum, and Rav, is a transition. Because Gadol Va'atzum means great and mighty. In other words, those are qualities. Rav is no longer a discussion of qualities, but rather quantities. Rav means many. And what the Baal Haggadah is intimating to us is that actually these are sequential events. The Jewish people began Gadol Va'atzum. They began as great people. But then there was a certain hitdardarut, there was a certain degeneration, whereby the original Jews that came down, as we say, Vayamas Yosef Echolacha V'Cholador Hahu, what began as defining the Jewish people, describing them as Gadol Atzum, qualities became translated into quantity, and there was a qualitative decrease. And that's what's highlighted by the Baal Haggadah. Because whereas for Gadol Atzum, it quotes the original Pasuk, which really has the Jewish people at their best, but when it comes to the word Varav, it moves over to Yechezkel to understand that Rav is a transition. Rav is no longer talking B'shvachim Shel Yisrael. It's just talking the fact that they were many. Instead of saying how great they were, the Pasuk moves to talk about how many of them they were. And when qualities become substituted for quantities, so that already is a descent. And that's why the proof text that is quoted, the Pasuk for Rav, is Ravava Ketzemach HaSodeh, which is many, but not particularly important or impressive, just the grass that grows in the field. And therefore, if we wish to understand, at least to a degree, what brought on the Vayareu Asana HaMitzvim Vayanunu, it was a certain element of abdication from the Jewish people's status as Gadol Atzum, whereby they were less interfered with, to become Varav. And as they compromised on their qualities and focused more on quantities, or if that's the only thing you can say about them, is that there are a lot of them, that means that there isn't anything characteristic to say about them, that's what led to Vayanunu. Vayareyu Asana HaMitzvim Vayanunu. So these are very subtle messages that are being projected to us by the Baal Haggadah. If we pay attention to which psukim are quoted in order to qualify what, it gives us an entirely new insight. Now, I'd like to be Mesayim Betov, of course, Maschilim Mekunusim Mesayim Bashevach. A fascinating comment from Rabbi Yaakov Milisa, that's the author of the Nesivas HaMishpat and other works, and he has a parish on the Haggadah called Maase Nisim. And he comments on a part of Maggid. I think by this stage we're already treading water until Motzi Matzah. But these are critical points of Maggid, because in a sense it's the culmination of where does Yetzias Mitzrayim, where does it lead us to? The night of Sifiyutis Mitzrayim is meant to re-experience as much as we can, to simulate the experience of Yetzias Mitzrayim, to the extent that Halal and Hodar are a natural progression of what we just went through. And that is why we say, B'chol dor v'dor chayav adam liras atzmo ki'ilu yotzei mimitzrayim, l'fichach anachnu chayavim lehodos. If that's how we see ourselves, so then it's only natural. Anachnu chayavim lehodos, lehalel l'shabeach, etc., etc. Lemi she'osu l'avoseinu v'lanu es hanisim ho'elu. And what do we say? We say five things just before Halal. We say, Hosiyonu me'avdos l'cheirus, from slavery to freedom. Miyogam nesimcha, from sadness to gladness. Me'eva le'yomtov, from mourning to yomtov. Me'afela Lo'or gadol, from darkness to great light, umi shibud ligeula, from subjugation to redemption, v'novo lafonav shira chadosh. And that thus begins the Hala. So it's very interesting that we describe Yetzias Mitzrayim in five ways. Afeila la'ora, shibud ligeula. What is contained within here? Says the Ma'aseh Nisim, we know that Yetzias Mitzrayim, in a sense, was the seminal root golus experience of the Jewish people. It was almost, one could say, the Ma'aseh Avos for all subsequent golios. We've mentioned in the past, in the name of the Bnei Yisachar, Tzvi Elimelech of Dinov, that the days of golus Mitzrayim are called Hayomim Harabim Hahem, many days. Why are there many days? Because they are compact within them all the future golios. Hayomim harabim hahi. And in fact, the word rabim, says the Bnei Yisachar, the four letters of rabim, resh, beis, yud, and mem, correspond to Rome, Romi, Bavel, Yavon, and Modai. That's the rabim. That's what we mean by many. It's the root from which they are branches. And therefore, Yetzias Mitzrayim, in a sense, is also the root geula experience, which has emanated and reverberated in subsequent geulos. And therefore, says the Ma'aseh Nisim, when we mention these five transitions, they are references to the original geula plus the subsequent four. For once again, we say, Hotzionu me'avdus l'cheirus. From the original Avdus L'Cheirus, of course, is Avodim Hayinu to Cheirus Ola. The next expression is Miyogon L'Simcha. Now, Yogon, says the Ma'aseh Nisim, if one looks to Migilas Eicha, which is about the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, so it is full of the term Yogon. That's what describes the Jewish people, their groaning, their sadness. Miyogon L'Simcha is the redemption from the first Golos Bavel. The next golus is called Me'evel Yomtov. That's Purim. Because as we know, when the decree was leveled against the Jewish people, Evel Gadol LaYehudim, when it was lifted, Simcha V'Yomtov. And therefore Me'evel Yomtov is the next reverberation of Yetzias Mitzrayim in the state of Purim. Next, Me'afeila L'Or Gadol, from darkness to light. That's the next geula from Golos Yavon, which is characterized by darkness. The Choshech is Yavon, and the light, of course, is the menorah. And then we conclude with Mishibud LeGeula, because Shibud is that subjugation which remains with the Jewish people where they are until the final Geula. And once again, we bring ourselves back to our discussion of last week, whereby wherever the Jewish people are, there is a certain aspect of Shibud, of being beholden, whether it's to public opinion or to world opinion. And that's a shibud that constrains the Jewish people sometimes from doing what they have to do. And that final geula, mishibud l'geula, is actually the fourth emanation coming from Yetzias Mitzrayim itself. And that's why every year, as we refresh and as we recharge and as we relive and re-experience Yetzias Mitzrayim, we are trying to tap into the spirit of geula, in order to activate it and bring closer the final geulah that we're waiting for. That's why the Chazal say, Benissim, Benissan Nigalu, Benissan Asidi Nigal. In other words, there is no time that is more ripe for geulah than Nissan, because it was the time of the root geulah, and therefore we survey all of the geulahs that we've had to date, and we finish off Shivad L'Geulah, V'Noma L'Fanav, Shira Chadasha. And that is the note that we begin Hallel, and it's Hallel partly on the past and Hallel also in anticipation for the future. I wish you all a Chag Kasher v'Sameach. We will meet again in Mitzvah Hashem in 2 weeks' time. Chol HaMoed is a week off, and this time 2 weeks Mitzvah Hashem.